TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, be careful with those magnesite drops that you've got there. You do not want to get that on your keyboard.
Oh, Chris, how many keyboards have I gone through?
just burning through them, right?
Yeah, just burning through them. It's so frustrating. So frustrating. Oh, my gosh.
You got to be really careful with that stuff.
Yep, you do. You got to be real careful. So,
all right, everyone. Well, we're going to stay away from the magnesite drops today as we discuss the next episode in Season 2 of our DS9 30th Anniversary Rewatch. This is Episode 8 of the season, Necessary Evil. And here is a quick rundown of the story. When someone attempts to kill Quark, Odo starts down a path that leads him to reopen a 5-year-old murder investigation. Dating back to the days of Terok Nor, the mystery centered on a familiar face, Kira Nerys. After seeing her as a prime suspect in the killing of a shop owner named Vatrick, Odo ultimately dismissed her involvement, in part to protect her from Gul Dukat, but never quite let go of the unsolved case. The presence of Vatrick's widow aboard DS9 alongside the attack on Quark, together with the discovery of a list of 8 Bajoran names, sets Odo into full Columbo mode, and what he ultimately uncovers may change how he sees Kira forever. So, Matthew, this was a case of the writers wanting to really show us Odo as an investigator. And so they turned to that classic TV detective formula and gave us a story about Odo's time aboard Terok Nor. So how did you feel this worked? And I guess in the context of what they wanted to do, how well does that setting of Terok Nor work compared with them trying to give us that glimpse of him as an investigator in the present aboard DS9 with Starfleet running the station and all that?
Well, I mean, when you said that he went into full Columbo mode, all I could think of was full Columbo mode, full Columbo mode. You know,
exactly.
I know
he becomes Columbo-do.
Yes, I know the Bashir likes secret agent man, you know, Odo likes Columbo mode, and it is really interesting because this is one of those places where, like most of the Star Trek shows, you know, when you want to showcase a character, you kind of set them in a place into which their main character trait can be portrayed. And so Odo getting the opportunity to do what we know him to be as the constable was fascinating. I mean, I think even just us getting the story of the first time he is, quote unquote, the constable. I mean, you know, Kira is the one who gives him that name, actually. She's the first person who calls him that, which I found really fascinating. And so this whole thing is one of those places where Deep Space Nine really did seem to be on target for the way in which it could tell a story about a character like Odo. And I think the going back in time to Terok Nor, I mean, is such a pivotal moment here for Deep Space Nine anyway, just because, you know, we've heard a lot about the occupation, But here, we actually get the opportunity to see it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And really get an opportunity to see what it was like for the Bajorans to live during that time period, what was going on this space station, how bad the living conditions really were for mm-hmm. everybody involved. And so I, to me, you know, look, you could easily have done this just being a murder investigation of somebody wanted to kill Quark and you kept it on Deep Space Nine and in that mm-hmm. time period. But this, I think, is so much stronger and so much better and so much and I don't know if it well thought out is really the thought process or the right word, but it does seem like, yeah, I'm just going to say, I think it's more well thought out to put it back in time because of all the things it does for the character of Odo, for our understanding mm-hmm. of the Bajorans, what they've been through, for our understanding of Kira herself, the whole, conundrum that the Bajorans found themselves in and how they would fight the Cardassians. I mean, there are so many different little things in here that build into the greater mythos of Deep mm-hmm. Space Nine all within this episode. And that's all because you chose to go back to Tarak Nor.
Right. Yeah.
And if you hadn't done that, half of those things wouldn't exist in this episode. So yeah, really
that's
smart.
A key. Yeah. Yeah. That's a key thing, right? That because they went back to Tarak Nor, they're able to tie in all those things that you describe, which if they had done it in the present time frame on DS9, it would had to have been like, Odo's looking back at records or something, and he's kind of reminiscing, although that's probably not the right word in that situation, in terms of how he would feel about what happened. But by going back, yeah, they're able to give us something that's much deeper than the typical murder mystery. And I think also by embracing the tone of the show, which is something that actually Nana Visitor had said about this episode, where she said that she really loved how the episode left the relationship between Kira and Odo, which we can talk about later, but left it ambiguous, and that the show...
Yes.
One yeah. of the things the show does very well, she said, is that it doesn't tie things up in nice, neat little bows for the audience. And because it embraced that approach to writing here, I think that it allowed Odo to follow this trail, and where as a viewer, you really don't know for sure who may have killed Vadrick either. And the fact that even in the end, he isn't able to solve mm-hmm. the case really sets it apart from your typical murder mystery. Yeah. And I think makes yeah. the episode a lot richer.
Well, and I like what you said, because I think one of the keys to this is that, my wife was watching this with me before she had to leave this evening. And she's not really seen too much of Deep Space Nine. She's seeing an episode here and there because I'll mm-hmm. be watching it, for this show. She's almost finished with TNG. So at some point we'll dive into Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
But she had to leave the room. She came back and the episode's just about over. And she's like, asking me the questions about what happened and what was the ramifications and all these things. And it was, she hadn't quite figured it out, but then she asked, she was like, was she the killer?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really interesting because she had watched enough of the episode to kind of pick up maybe there's something more to this. And she's just really good at that stuff in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that that's one of the beauties of the episode, because the way it's written and because the show has done such a good job, and even this episode has done such a good job of explaining to us how smart Odo is. I mean, basically, he's the Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. The way he can read people, the way he can tell all these, physical cues and mm-hmm. all those kind of things. You trust him when he says that he believes that Kira was not responsible, and that's why he let her go in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well,
That really makes the yeah. reveal at the end have more punch to it, because
right, yeah, for sure.
we are predisposed to believe Odo to know the truth from a lie.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, and I like the way that he answers Dukat, because Odo's aware that Kira's doing some stuff that would not be legal. You know, the Cardassians would, she's warning him that she would be executed if Dukat were to be on her trail. And the way that he answers Dukat, he does it without lying. He says, I'm convinced she did not kill him, right? That's so the direct statement. It wasn't like, I'm convinced she's completely innocent of everything that she could possibly have done. But he answers clearly to Dukat, I believe she did not commit the murder. And so he's being very honest there. You mentioned how he picks up on physical cues. And one thing I noted is that it's interesting multiple times in the story how he picks up on facial expressions and the conditions of people's faces as a clue to whether they might be guilty or what they might have done or their situation. And I just find that interesting as someone who, for Odo, is someone who really has trouble doing faces. He seems to be very attuned to other people's faces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe that's because he's spent so much time truly looking at a person, right? Mm-hmm. Because he is working to mimic. And so therefore, mm-hmm. that's what gives him this ability because he can't quite do it, right? But it is the study of the human face that leads him, you know, to be able to actually pick out all of these variations, because those are all the things he's thinking about. How do I do this? How do I do this? You know, he's studying in the same way, like, you know, a painter would study their muse and try to get every little intricate detail just right so they could capture that person in a way that, that made them feel real on the canvas. And, you know, Odo is the canvas, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure, too, even just practicing all of these type of things in the mirror. Yeah. So I really like that as well. I think that's another key element here where it's like, yes, we have told these type of stories before in Star Trek many times. Mm-hmm. And yet this is a story that could only be told on Deep Space Nine the way it is because we're leaning into who Odo is as a character as opposed to it's just another murder mystery story.
Yeah. And I was thinking Odo could, if he wanted to, he could literally be the canvas. Just.
Yes, he could. And he could paint himself if he wanted.
Paint himself.
So it's a little awkward, but you know.
Yeah. Well, sort of keeping on the theme of what we're talking about, but switching gears a little bit. Going back to the past, like you said, it gives us a glimpse of how the conditions were on Terek Nor back then for people. It is interesting that we find out that the way the Cardassians would handle a murder is to just round up 10 random people and execute them to send a message to the murderer. Like, what's the message? Like, don't do it again? Or, hey, someone else might kill someone and you might be one of the 10 people we round up next time. I thought that was a very harsh but important glimpse into kind of the Cardassian way of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I like that you bring that up as well. And I do think that that is one of the things that shows us how the Cardassians are so overconfident, right, in themselves that they don't even work to solve a murder. Mm-hmm. You know, they just indiscriminately start rounding people up and shooting them and hope that that's a deterrent, you know. Mm-hmm. And really what all that that's doing is continuing to fuel the fires of the insurgency.
Yeah, right.
You know, mm-hmm. And so the groups that they would call terrorists, the group that obviously Kira is a part of, the Bajoran resistance here is going to be fed, going to be fueled by this type of behavior, you know? And so it is fascinating to me that the Cardassians would be so short-sighted. But I mean, I think that anytime we look at true totalitarian regimes around the world, most of them are so enamored of their own power and think themselves so untouchable that you end up with them doing things like this that just fuel the fire of resistance. Mm-hmm. And so,
because they're not worried about the resistance because they don't believe the resistance can ever overthrow them anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, because they're fools. So, that's the interesting part here. I really appreciate it. Again, there's such wisdom for the writers here to put this back in time. And correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I do believe this is actually really the first time that we travel back in time to Terok Nor.
Yeah, this is the first time we actually get to see Terok Nor, yeah.
Which I think is, again, it's incredibly powerful because it's one of those things that we've not seen before, but the whole story revolves around this, what has happened in, you know, the last 50 years of, under the occupation.
Yeah.
And I think it was really important for us as viewers to actually see this. And then, of course, it opens the door for us to do it more.
Right. And not just the last 50 years, but the last 5 years or even just a couple of years, because what it does, we get to see Odo meet Kira and Quart and Dukat for the first time. But it wasn't that long ago. And so I think it really helps the premise of the show feel real, that not only did this station exist before Sisko and Starfleet arrived, but a lot of the people that we see all the time had their own lives and their own interactions with one another in a completely different environment just a few years earlier.
Well, and it, you know, a lot of times you do a throwback episode that brings you back in time to when things first happened. And a lot of fans can kind of be like, oh, okay, so this is where we meet everybody. You know, with this episode, it feels so organic. Like, oh, there's Gold Dukat, and there's Odo meeting him for the first time, and there's Quark, and there's Kira, and none of it feels forced or like, oh, we're just trying to drop member berries in. It does feel as though I'm just experiencing as Odo remembers it.
Yeah.
And therefore, like you said, this becomes a really pivotal episode of the series, because it introduces us to all of these characters the first time they're introduced to each other, and it juxtaposes them with who they were then and who they are now.
Yeah, because it keeps going back and forth, right?
Yeah.
It's not like the Friends episode where we learn how all the friends met each other, right?
Exactly.
One other thing I wanted to say about the setting in the past in terms of the investigation is that I think that the environment of the station allows the writers to tell a mystery and an investigation that feels more real to us than it would in the present time frame, because I feel like if it were on DS9, if he had been investigating the case from the past on Terok Nor in the present time frame, there's like a lot of technology that he probably would use, like a lot of Starfleet technology that we're familiar with and that would make it easier for him. But it feels a lot grittier being on Terok Nor. It feels a lot more like a present day detective trying to uncover clues and follow a trail somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. And it does make for just a more interesting story in that sense, because we're having to see Odo just rely on his natural talents. And again, too, this is just something where we also have one more piece of the puzzle about who Odo is, right? The fact that ever since that he's existed, he's been driven by this desire to see justice done. And he has an innate sense of what justice is and what it isn't. And I think that is just a little bit more of that puzzle piece for, you know, the grand picture that we don't have yet at this point in the series as to who Odo is going to be, which, you know, I don't even think the writers have a complete idea at this point as to who Odo is going to be.
Yeah.
And yet they keep adding these puzzle pieces that build this picture, and it just continues to get kind of more and more fascinating. And as they do that too, it's like it leads the audience to wonder, right, about who this character is and what's making them tick. And again, we answer one of those questions about what makes Odo tick.
Yeah. So what makes you tick? It reminds me of the news radio episode.
Well, nothing actually, because I'm not really a solid person. So.
That's right. Reminds me of the news radio episode where James Caan comes to the station to shadow Bill, who was played by Phil Hartman, to do a movie. And he just wants to observe. And Bill's like, so you want to know what makes me tick, right? James Caan's like, I don't care what makes you tick. Anyway, yeah, it's interesting here. This could fall into that category of Dominion breadcrumbs, and I don't think we've ever included this one when we've talked about them before, but just as the writers are trying to figure out who the Dominion is going to be and Odo's connection to the founders, his log where he says, nobody ever had to teach me the justice trick. That's something I've always known. A racial memory from my species, I guess. It's really the only clue I have to what kind of people they are. Is interesting to hear watching it back when you know the whole story and where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this episode, by the way, is the only episode where we ever hear Odo narrating logs in the kind of traditional Star Trek style of a log narration. So it's kind of interesting. Another thing here I wanted to ask you about, Kira tells Odo that one must always choose a side when Odo is saying, well, he's an outsider, you know, he's neutral. And he does come down on a side ultimately in this story when he has to protect Kira from Gul Dukat. He's in a sense taking a side, although I'm not sure that he thinks he is. What do you think about her statement in general? Because DS9's very much this show about shades of gray and not really coming down clearly on one side or another. But do you think it's actually possible to remain neutral when you have all these different forces pulling at you from different directions?
Well, I love the question about whether or not Odo thinks he is. And I don't think that Odo believes himself to truly be taking a side.
Right.
Because, as he says to Gul Dukat, she's not guilty of the crime you would accuse her of. And so, therefore, to him, to let her go is not against his sense of justice. And so I love that, you know, again, this is one of those things, right, where Deep Space Nine kind of creates a question then for everybody who's watching carefully, is justice enough, right? Even if we have an idea of what justice is, well, I mean, if it's not tempered by any other values, we can twist that in a lot of different ways. And I think that's really interesting. And of course, Odo is able to twist that his sense of justice into allowing her to go, even though, again, he is working for the Cardassians, and they would want to pick her up. And so, therefore, I think you're right. Odo does choose a side in that way. He does make a value judgment on whether or not turning Kira in to the Cardassians, knowing what they would do to her, and I think also seeing what they are doing to the Bajoran people, he does seem to kind of choose a side here. And that is, I think, in the end of these big moral questions, I don't think it is possible for us to not choose a side. But I also think it makes abundantly clear that we can't just be driven by one virtue.
Right.
All the virtues need to work together to help us make these decisions, you know? And I think that's where... And that's kind of one of the definitions of wisdom, right? It's rightly applied knowledge. And so that's one of those things where we see Odo kind of putting together a lot of pieces here, and he makes this decision to let her walk. And so, yeah, I do love that because it is a question as well for that Star Trek has been faced with many times for our different characters. I think it's one of the reasons captains have always struggled with what to do with the Prime Directive thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because this rule, you know, comes up and butts up against other virtues that we hold dear as people.
Right.
And yeah. So I think that's what, again, it's one of the things that makes Star Trek really interesting when it's done really well, right? It makes you ask big questions. And this episode doesn't give anybody any easy answers, mm-hmm. which is what Deep Space Nine was best at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Prime Directive butts up against reality as well, right? Like it's a good idea in principle, but it's very hard to actually apply in the real world, which I think is how I feel about this question of coming down on one side or the other. I think in the real world, for most people, we have views of situations that straddle a line one way or both directions, I guess I would say, not extreme to one side or the other. And circumstances, however, sometimes will force you into essentially taking a side, because it's not always possible to just be neutral, even if you don't entirely agree with one side or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so I think, you know, that's a question raised here in this episode for sure. I wanted to also ask you about, this is an interesting thing about this episode, because as we're watching it, we're trying to figure out who may have committed the murder or who's involved in it. Rick Berman made an interesting decision in cutting a scene, which Michael Piller wanted to keep in, and so did Mark Lymo, who's playing Gul Dukat. And the scene was after Odo talks to Kira, he goes to see Paura, and as he's approaching her quarters, he sees Gul Dukat leave the quarters and they kiss goodbye. And then Dukat goes away. And that scene is not in the episode. And it seems like that the inclusion of that scene would have really changed the viewing experience of trying to figure out who may be responsible for this. Now, you can imagine that all that happened and we didn't see it, so it doesn't necessarily change Odo's investigation. But for us as a viewer, it's sort of an interesting choice to remove something like that, that probably, I feel, cutting that scene took away a little bit of the richness of the story.
That's an interesting one, because I think in some ways, to me, I don't know if it muddies the waters, you know, I'm not quite sure how I would feel about that scene being in there, because I do feel like, you know, they already have reasoning for Dukat choosing Odo as the person to do this investigation, which I really liked, right? Because it is about Bajorans who are working for Cardassians. And so therefore, Gul Dukat wants himself removed from the situation as far as possible so he can seem to be objective in this, right? Even though what he's really wanting is to protect these collaborators. So then him having kind of an affair with Paura, I feel like that just kind of muddies things too much, and it makes it and it doesn't necessarily help the story really any. So I understand why they cut it. I get why they cut it. And because, yeah, it's a wild misdirection that doesn't actually pay off for the rest of the story. It's just a wild misdirection. And so I can see why then they felt like it wasn't needed. So I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Well, I feel like if it had been in there, it would have given us one more person to suspect a little bit. So it would make the puzzle a little bit more complicated. I see what you're saying, of course. And it's not like we don't have enough to ponder in the story as it is right now. I mean, the fact that Odo can't figure it out in the end shows how complicated the whole thing is in the first place.
Well, and I would argue that if you had this, Odo has another avenue to walk down and to be searching for whether or not, you know, Goldacott has any involvement in all of this. And it's easier to believe that Odo couldn't solve the mystery when the only person we find out later is actually involved was Kira all along. Instead of, you know, I feel like if the Ducat scene had been in there, well, then it almost really doesn't make sense for this to be an unsolved mystery, if that makes sense. I feel like that scene, inserting it in there, makes that feel less plausible than where we get to the end when we're like, oh, Odo, that's why he never solved it. Because the person he believed was a bad liar was actually the best liar he'd ever run into.
She has a coffee mug that says that. She keeps it on her desk.
Best liar you've ever met.
Best liar, yeah.
Yep, exactly. Forget world's best boss. World's best liar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes you wonder about the truthfulness of that coffee mug. So,
coffee mug just is saying. Also a great liar.
Yeah. they usually are. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's an interesting view as well. It's also interesting just thinking about how, you know, the creative collaboration of deciding what to keep and what to cut and, you know, the reasoning behind it is interesting to ponder. Well, I guess a last point here before we wrap up is Kira and Odo themselves, the relationship. We're still quite a long way away from situations like Heart of Stone, which is going to come up almost a whole season. It actually is more than a whole season from here, which is an important episode to give insight into their relationship. But I've been getting the feeling a little bit, you know, you can tell that like Odo has some kind of feeling or connection or something for Kira, just a bit. And I think that Renee does a good job in this episode of like conveying that a little bit very subtly towards the end, especially when Kira comes and actually reveals to him that she was responsible all along. And he legitimately seems hurt that she didn't open up to him to this point, right, which is an interesting thing to think about given what he is actually as a changeling. The level of emotion that he seems to have as someone who's really not a humanoid, I found it interesting as well in the way that Renee portrayed that. But how do you feel this informs, I guess I would say, the writing of these two characters and the eventual development of their relationship from here on?
I mean, I think the thing that this does for them as characters is that it truly heightens their relationship. It shows that they have a very deep relationship in general. I mean, the fact that Kira was afraid to tell Odo because she has such a high regard for him and she doesn't want to ruin that, I think speaks volumes for even just Kira and herself, right? I mean, I think one of the things it does for Kira is that it reminds us that she still has a lot of guilt about all the things that she did do during the occupation and as a part of the Bajoran resistance. And Odo's high view of Kira and who she is means a lot to her. And I think when you when you put it in that context, it makes sense as to why she would not want to ruin that. Because, again, Odo is a person that she respects, I think, especially because of the choice that he made to save her when he knew that she was doing something nefarious, at least in Cardassian terms. And so I love that. But I also really love the way in which this does leave Odo in a place where, again, is he going to choose a side? Is he going to be able to see past that and to basically let that go, even though his core value is justice, and not allow that to affect his view of Kira and their relationship? And again, that's the ambiguity that we get at the end of the episode. What's going to happen? Is that going to be able to happen? And that's what we see kind of play out through the you know, the next few episodes and the rest of the series is. Mm-hmm. And so that the beauty of that is that it's such a human thing. We all have to deal with this when it comes to people in our lives, because everybody is going to let us down. And everybody is going to do things to which they surprise us, they shock us, they sadden us, and they make us, you know, have to reckon with, okay, that happened. How am I going to see them? And am I going to see them differently? And so, yeah, I really like what this does for their relationship. And it's one of the hallmarks of Deep Space Nine, right? Because there's even a little moment there where when Odo is questioning Rom in the bar and Sisko's standing there and they start doing good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Just instinctively. Mm-hmm. Like, it's another great little moment, you know. So there's so many wonderful little moments that happen in this episode that are relational for these characters. It's fantastic. So, man, the writers here just kind of knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. Well, what are your final thoughts and what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, I mean, this is a watermark for me for the season in the sense of the genius of going back in time to inform the present. You know, this isn't one of those places where, you know, many times that can be a cheat for a series to go back in time or just to do a flashback, right? So that you can make something feel legitimate for what you're going to do next. But that's not what they're doing here at all, right? You know, your favorite example of what they did on, you know, Discovery, just so that, you know, you could kill a character. I mean, they're not playing that game here. They truly are trying to, they're trying to expand the emotional range of these characters and their own relationships with one another. And man, they knocked this one out of the park. I'm going to give this 5 out of 5 secret lists, because I really do think that this is a phenomenal episode of Deep Space Nine. And even if you've seen it multiple times, the character work makes all of the reveals still have meaning. They kind of still get you because of what happens in the end.
Yeah. 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 My final thoughts echo that pretty well. Like you said, they're not doing the flashback to justify anything that they're doing in the story. They're actually building relationships over time. And what we see in the flashbacks really like have ongoing consequences to the characters as individuals, as well as the relationships they have with each other, and makes those characters richer for us as viewers as well. So I think it is one of the best episodes, certainly, of the season. But I mean, there are a lot of really strong episodes throughout the 7-season run of the show, but this is definitely up there as some of the best work that they do with the characters. And so I'm going to give this one 100,000 Bajoran Litas.
Nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Necessary Evil. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the discussions beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode. And you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose the orb, and that will come to us by email, and you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm, and if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not inventing new ways to store things microscopically, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, when I'm not doing that, you can find me all over social media. under the name Matt Rushing 02. You can also find me here on the network talking about all of those franchises outside of Star Trek that we love on the 602 Club. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party doing a couple of shows. One is called Owlpost, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, and On Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out how you're going to wrangle that bar from your best friend, where can people find you?
Yeah, one of these days that bar is going to be mine, but not today, so I'm going to have to cry and cry out loud at the top of my lungs. Taking lessons from Rom, learning how to do that best I can. Can you imagine being on the set when that was going on?
Oh, my gosh. No. No. Oh.
Oh, man. All right. But you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you. Larry Nemechek and I have recorded a new episode of The Ready Room where we look back at season 3 of Strange New Worlds. So that should be out by the time you hear this. If not, it will be soon. And you can find me in the back catalog on lots of shows from the past 15 years if you want to hear my thoughts on a wide range of Star Trek. And if you'd like to help us keep all of that going, this rewatch, everything we're doing, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. And I forgot to mention, also, if you'd like to chat with me, you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we get our second sight and maybe see people who aren't really there.
Well, Chris, I see dead people. And we want to thank everybody for listening to this spooky edition of The Orb, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.